big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
On this episode, I am joined by a true legend. He was a teammate of mine when I came through at West Ham, and he went on to win 6 Premier League titles, the Champions League. He captained England and is undoubtedly one of the best centre-halves this country has ever produced. Welcome to the podcast, Rio Ferdinand.
Rio, good to thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
With all my guests, I take them back to the very beginning. Like, what was it like growing up in Peckham and being the second most famous person after Derek Trotter to come out of Peckham?
And Desmond's.
Yeah, and the Desmond's as well. What a show that was.
No, you know what? It was always, when I think about and talk about Peckham, it's always with like fond memories.
Yeah.
Always brings a smile to my face. Probably like what you was like when you grew up on like a council estate, full of people. And it's weird, it's one of the most popping WhatsApp groups on my phone is from the boys on my estate still.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what I mean? There's about 6-7 of us in there, and the memories, it's like memory lane, it's unbelievable, man. So, no, great times and good times. There's obviously times where it gets a bit like murky sometimes, but majority of the time it's just all smiles, loads of noise.
Yeah, I mean, I drove past your estate the other day and you've got the blue plaque on the wall. I can't believe it, in Peckham. I remember seeing the blue plaque, I thought, who's from Peckham? Surely he's come from Peckham.
Still boy or Rio?
Some poet or something. Rio Ferdinand lived
I can't get a parking ticket, can I? It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Listen, I need the blue plaque in Camden Town, please.
If you know what, I took my kids to that, that's the estate I grew up on.
Yeah.
And my kids see it. I didn't say them to them, but they saw it. And I was like, Dad, what's that? What you got? What, they named the estate after you? Yeah, man, that's just what happens, you know what I mean, when you play football at the highest level. But no, it's a touching, nice thing.
Yeah, do you know what as well? I'm going to do the same. I'm taking Ruby back to Camden. I've shown her like pictures of where we lived and she can't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, what, you all lived in here?
Yeah, it's mad,
a different world, isn't
it? It's different.
But anyway, this, we know like about your career, but I don't know if everyone knows, you did ballet as a kid.
Mm.
And what was the thoughts behind that? Was that your dad?
No, my dad was into martial arts.
Right.
And I'd done that a little bit as a kid, but I used to do gymnastics and I'd done gymnastics in the London Games as a kid, like about 10 years old. And when I was there, I didn't know this, but it's called the Central School of Ballet, one of the biggest ballet schools in London, in Farringdon. They had like people out and about, scouts looking for potentials, and I must have stood out as a ballet dancer doing gymnastics. And the fellow approached the school. They asked three of us from my school, funny enough, if we wanted to go and do ballet. And I'd never even probably said the word ballet, let alone thought about doing it as a kid from a council estate. And all the implications that would have entailed telling my mates that. But when I got asked, I was like, do you know what? Immediately, I just went, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because I just looked at it as like an adventure. Off of my estate, I'm travelling somewhere else, going to meet new people, new girls, maybe. Opportunity to interact and that. And then I just thought, let me just see what it's like. I went, you had like a day where you went and done loads of different things, different types of dancing. And I got like a scholarship, four-year scholarship, So I went there for like 3.5-4 years. And by the end, it was like, I was done with it really mentally. But I made a lot of friends, met a lot of new people, done big production things, and was a ridiculous experience. But with hindsight, I look back now, and it's one of the best things I've done.
Because for balance. For football?
Yeah, for football. So like my balance, agility, even for power.
If
I took you to go and do a ballet lesson, what I was doing there, the next day it'd have been like you've done a pre-season, your first day in pre-season.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't be able to walk properly. Hard, man. Core, your glutes, your legs and that. It's hard discipline.
That's interesting because I mean, there's a boxer called Lomachenko and he said his dad done the same thing with him. Mm. Said, look, before your dad was a fighter, before you even put on gloves, he had to go and learn ballet for a year. So we had the basic sort of physicality. So what ages was that from?
That was from about 10, 11 years old up to about 13, 14 years old.
Yeah. Was there any moments when you was leaving the estate with the ballet shoes in the bag thinking, please don't let me bump into anyone?
At the beginning, no one knew, yeah? Right. But I swear to you, I was just quite a confident kid. Yeah. I didn't care. I was comfortable with my group of mates. Yeah. And I'm going to a dance school. Yeah. What, you do dance? Whee! All that type of stuff you can imagine. But because I was good at football, that was a shield.
Yeah.
That gave me a bit of breathing space. You know what I mean? Yeah, if I was just like any old kid that didn't play football on the estate, I'd have been ridiculed for ages and probably would have said, you know what, I can't. It would have been a big thing to go.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, Rio is leaving the estate or ain't coming to play football today because he's gone dance school. The laughing weared off after a couple of months. But I was confident enough, and I with a lot of things growing up as a kid, I got let off because I played football and I was known to be good at football.
Yeah.
So if there was trouble on the estate or whatever, don't get Rio involved because he's got a chance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that's how a lot of the kids, maturity really, a lot of immaturity goes on these estates, but that's a really mature element there that the kids, without speaking about it, used to protect you a little bit.
Yeah.
And also my dad as well, my mum, they were like, my dad was like, on my estate, we want to knock my door really. In case my dad answers the door, he's quite a hard person, do you know what I mean? So it was, football, people say football saved my life. It is a weird thing to say that, but it definitely protected me.
You know, we grew up very similar places. The football took off for you, but yours was QPR, I think, was the first trials you went to.
Yeah, the first professional football club who invited me, because you used to get invited a lot of time. They see you play on a Sunday. Funny enough, the scout come and watch, his name was Sandy, he'd come and watch the opposing team. We played a team called Long Lane, quite a well-known team in my area, in Kentway. They were in A League. We were in Division Two,
right?
And we were playing them in the cup. So he came to watch their team, and he ended up taking three of our boys, and a couple from their team.
Right.
And that was my first time. QPR was the first club. They come to me and went, right, we want you to go. It was like ridiculous feeling, you know. It's that first feeling was.
You used to get the cards. With the
badge on it.
Yeah. And
QPR just approached us, unbelievable. Like, you go back to the estate, like, how did you get on? Forget the game. Just been told I can come to QPR and have a 6-week trial type thing. Unreal. Unbelievable.
And do you remember like when you used to play kids football and the scouts? They used to have the coach. You used to pocket with the long coats.
Yeah. It's mad because do you know what? As a kid, I weren't good with pressure.
Really.
The older I got, so when I got to my 14, 15 years old, 16. Before that, you'd see scouts at games and they wouldn't really do anything to me. But the older I got, you saw scouts at the games or you heard that there was an England scout at the game.
Yeah.
I would be like nervous, man. And I probably wouldn't play my best.
Okay.
And all the England trials I went to, the under 15s, the schoolboy, England schools team, you get like the regional trials, then you get down to the last 50, etc. I got to the last 50, funny enough. But it was like a weekend. You go there and you got people walking around with clipboards marking you.
I remember.
Worst scenario for me.
Really?
Yeah, because I would freeze. I just wouldn't be, I'd be nervous, just be tight.
Yeah.
Wouldn't relax. And I never got past, never got into it. And it took me a long time. And even like, when I got into West Ham, I was all right, I was fine. And it's weird, I got into England's team, I'm fast forwarding now, but I got to England and played for England in the World Cup and it happened against Brazil. I got caught up in the air in the moment, and the game froze, and it threw me back to when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
We're talking the full squad
in
that 2002
World Cup against Brazil. It's just like I just froze in the warm up before the game, and in the lineup when the national anthems were going on.
Yeah.
I'm playing Brazil, Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, Cafu, Roberto Carlos.
Yeah.
Family in the stands can hear my mum shouting, like just. The emotion of it all just took over me, and I just froze, and it just took me back to when I was a kid on trials with England and things like that. I thought, no way this is ever happening again. Didn't happen again in my career, never froze again. But as a kid, I found it really hard.
Yeah. So that moment at the World Cup in 2002 took you back to them playing in them school games with the trials.
It was weird.
What did you do? How did you manage? Did you do anything specific to stop that in any field?
No, it's when I was a kid, it was just it's like that trial period stops, doesn't it? After England it's like you sign for West Ham and then you're not on trial anymore, are you?
You're in there.
And then it's just like you're playing week in, week out, and at the end of the year they go, oh, you're in.
Yeah.
You don't. It's not like a one-off day where you go, you've got to perform today to get the contract.
Yeah.
So I was more at ease then.
Yeah.
And obviously in that period after that, you get to 15, 16, your confidence levels start to go up. Yeah. You start hitting a few targets, your name starts getting called a little bit, spotlight starts going on you a bit.
Yeah.
FA Youth Cup
against
Liverpool, we got beat obviously in the final against Michael Owen's team, but the local news are talking about you. You walk anywhere as a kid on your, in your area, people going, that's the kid, you can feel that.
Yeah.
And so your confidence is like massive, do you know what I mean? You're not egotistical or anything like that, but you're just like, I've got a real good chance.
Yeah. So, West Ham, I mean, I have my ideas of why actually. Why West Ham? Because I know you was courted by all the clubs in in London. Why West Ham?
Well, I was doing like, you could, back in the day then, like at 15 years old, you could do like a, or 14 and 15, you could do like a, oh, I'm going to have a look at, I've been asked by six clubs, I'm going to go to each of the clubs and have a little Easter down there. I'm going to have after Christmas there.
Yeah.
I used to go Norwich, Middlesbrough, like all these other clubs.
Yeah.
It's like an adventure. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people like Ron Bone at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Gordon Bennett, their youth development officers.
Yeah.
At Norwich and Middlesbrough respectively. But Millwall, I went when Mick McCarthy was manager. I remember him pulling me and my mum in, asking me to sign a contract to Millwall, the manager. And I was like, it was amazing. But now kids can't do that. You sign at a club and you're tied to that club.
Yeah.
But I was moving about. And then it was like a day came and it was like, you've got to sign on this day.
Yeah.
And I had like Chelsea, Middlesbrough, Norwich, Millwall, Charlton, West Ham, QPR, etc. And I almost said yes to go in Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Lenny Lawrence was the manager.
Yeah.
He knew my district manager, mate, a guy called Dave Goodwin, great guy.
I remember Dave. He was my manager of London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Been a London manager. Unbelievable football brain. And I loved the adventure going up there. I loved staying up there when I was there. It was different.
Yeah.
Different environment. I wanted that adventure. Then it was like, well, maybe stay nearer to home at Millwall. Like, it's around the corner.
Yeah.
And then West Ham, I spoke to, remember Jimmy Neighbour and Jimmy
Hudson? Yeah.
They were the youth development officers. They shared the role. And one of the things that they said to me at the time was, we want young kids in our first team.
Yeah.
We ain't going to buy players. We want your crop, and then underneath that, or the year above was Frank and Lee Hodges and them, and then everything underneath with yourself coming through as well.
Yeah.
We want them in the first team.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest sell that I took on, and I thought, that is, I want to be in the first team.
Yeah.
So I can see a path here.
Yeah.
And that was it. I signed, and they said, we're signing all the best kids. We want all the best kids. Lee Hodges was the best in his age group.
Yeah.
Frank was in that age group, but he weren't considered the best. It was Frank. It was Lee Hodges and Emmanuel Omi. It's hard to say that one. They both played for England at the time. Underneath my age group was like Carrick and you.
Yeah.
It was you, really. You was the superstar. And then
Defoe
and that, and Glenn Johnson and that, my brother, Kieran Richardson, they was all coming.
Yeah.
So I thought, this has got to be the place, man. And I signed. Yeah. And I always say this to young kids, you're never certain it's the right decision. I don't know about you. When I signed, at any club in my life, I never thought 100% this is cast iron going to be a success, even as a schoolboy. Did you?
No. And my mum, talking to my mum and dad afterwards, they both wanted me to go to Man United because Alex Ferguson rolled out the red carpet. And then people say, well, what, you know, would it be, you imagine that you've gone to Man United, but I might not have come through at Man United. Because at 17, 18, 19, now what chance would I have got of getting Beck, Scholesy, Keane in their prime? So you just never know. But I went to West Ham for the same reason for you, like as you really, like I loved the people there and there was a path, weren't there?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, great people.
Mm.
Good family club.
Good family. And listen, so you'd done your apprenticeship, you ended up, you and Frank, what was it like when you made your debut? Trying to describe that moment, Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, it was like the stuff of dreams. Because you got to remember, like on that journey, that you sign YTS, which is now Scholar, where you go in full time after school. And before that season started, I played in the Southern Junior Floodlit Cup final against Chelsea, and I was like 2-3 years younger than all the other players. I was still at school. They were all like 17, 18 years old, and I played really well. And that was the moment in my life. I don't know if you've got this. That was the moment in my young career when it was starting where I thought, I think I'll definitely make it now.
Yeah.
Don't know what level, but I am going to make it at some level. Because I've played against players that have played in the first team at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Played in the first team at West Ham, and I feel I'm better than all of them.
Yeah.
And then you sign on, and you go in full time, I just remember being absolutely knackered every day.
Yeah, for the
first like 2-3 months. Doing your pre-season, coming home, just sleeping, 2-hour block, bang. Absolutely knocked out.
These kids don't know what a pre-season is though, do they? They don't really understand
no
it.
No data, no science.
No.
Run like the wind every day.
Remember Peter Braybrook, God bless him. He used to make us run a sprint from floodlight to floodlight, walk, sprint, and he didn't have a clock. And if someone come and had a chat with him, Pete was like, he'd just be chatting away, and then 20 minutes would pass, and you just carry on running around this thing.
Did you do the mile on the Monday?
Yeah.
That was the hardest Monday run.
Yeah.
You've got to bear in mind, at that age, when we were kids, we just started going out.
Yeah.
So we were all going out clubbing on a Saturday, sometimes a Sunday, coming on a Monday. And the first thing you do with no warm up or nothing was going, right, you've got to do the mile.
As fast as you can.
As fast as you can. But you become 3 laps of the pitch or 2 laps of the pitch or something like that?
Yeah.
As fast as you can.
Yeah.
And you get some lads who'd come in, try and get in late, but then they'd have to do it on their own. It used to be hard, man.
Yeah.
But the physical side of it and the mental side of it back then was really, it hardened you or you broke.
Yeah.
It was really good. I loved it. And what I loved about it was, youth team trained next to the reserves and the first team.
Yeah.
So what I loved is that, and how I got my chance the first time, someone got injured.
Yeah.
And they just called someone over. Right, we need a centre-half or we need a defender or give us two players, don't matter who you are. And I was called over, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So nervous, man. And you've got monks and people like that who are big mouths and like, they're heartless. If your first pass ain't on blob,
they're on you.
Get him back over there, send him back. Like, it's mad. It's like character building at its best.
I remember when it was similar, same thing with me. I used to get called over, but whoever got injured or needed a rest, then they'd say, oh, we need a left back, and they'd call over to Tony or right back, and it'd be righty or yourself, get the boy Wonder over, get the kid over. And
you
then I'd come over and
righty go
to me, listen, he'd say, go get on Monks and like try and meg him or something, and and I'd try and do something, flick it over someone's head, and he'd laugh. And I was almost like, that gate got me from there to there because the lads wanted me there because I'd do something.
I'd wait around and watch you play games.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard so much and I'd seen a bit here and there. I used to wait just to watch your games. It's mad. And even like, do you remember the first time you trained with us? Well, one of the first times you played a free touch game and you must have banged in 3 or 4 goals.
Yeah.
And everyone's going, he's still doing skills on free touches.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah,
like, it was mad.
Yeah.
But
I loved it.
It was mad. Did you ever play with that freedom ever again in your career?
No, not because like I had to find a way. So when I got into the first team at West Ham and we had the first 2 years and it was like just play. Then after that, we were sort of like, we went back to 4-4-2 and it was structured and like you have like relegation battles. So you're learning different aspects of the game. And then you go to Chelsea and then playing under Mourinho and Ranieri, there's a lot.
Tactical,
structure you have to learn, but I think there could have been a better balance between structure, and also you have to remember my type of player. It was easy to you could sort of kick me out of the game quite. I'd play in games sometimes, and it'll be like, not you'd get smashed, and I'd be looking at the ref, and you'd be like, you know, what's going on here? But nowadays, my type of player would probably there's more of my type of player, isn't it? Like players who like to receive the ball and turn and dribble and do that. But yeah, I mean, listen, it was a special club. You know, what was it like for you in terms of, I've got a lot to thank you because you and Frank were the trailblazers and I come in and it was a lot more comfortable, but you and Frank were coming in and it was like Julian Dix, Alvin Martin, a lot more old school players. You didn't have that sort of player 3 years above you who could sort of, like you sort of welcomed me in.
Yeah.
And it helped me a lot.
I think a lot of, I saw it a lot where people felt threatened of young players.
Yeah.
So you saw a resistance and you saw a bit of like, not hate, but you saw a little bit of like devilment would go on and...
Yeah.
Frank had it.
Yeah, I
know. Why Frank's the way he is now and he became really hard-nosed and hardened. Yeah. And you remember Frank went to private school. So like he went from background like we're from, so you wouldn't actually initially think that he's going to be hardened like the way he became. But he had to be because he had older pros that would make snide remarks maybe, would be leave a bit on him in training.
Yeah.
He would hear within earshot, he's only over it because of his old man and Harry's his uncle.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He ain't good enough, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And a lot,
I remember it.
Yeah, Frank would hear a lot of that. So I was lucky, man. I didn't get that. I got welcomed with open arms by the players. Ian Dowie, Dixie, Slaven Bilic,
yeah,
Avin Martin, like all these players, Monks, they should, like with you, they should say, God, read this, that and the other, you feel $1 million. That's why I knew how that felt. That's why I was comfortable doing that with you or with other young players that were coming through. Well, all through my career, I wanted players to feel like how I felt.
Yeah.
Not the way someone like Frank might have felt.
Yeah.
So it was good. Avin Martin was good. I played with him in the reserves and he was hard. He'd chat at me a lot. And he used to want me, some of the shouts he would, and I look back now, it's probably to protect him a little bit with my pace or whatever, but he'd shout at me and I think, bloody hell, but they prepare you.
Yeah.
Because in the first team, it's hard, man. People, it's livelihoods and you lose a game, you could drop down the league or whatever, so it's you've got to be ready for that.
Yeah, when we had Piercy on, Stuart Pearce, and I played sort of ahead of him and we talked about it, and you know, I think as an older player, you can benefit by the younger players. Like Alvin would have...
Yeah, 100%. Get another 6 months or a year contract.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Or you go the other way and you get them senior players, you get a bit nervous. So.
Yeah. No, it's mad. Piercy was a hard guy, man. But I remember playing against Piercy when he was at Newcastle at the end of his career. And I remember coming in at half-time. And again, these are things that build your character.
Yeah.
And I'm coming at half-time. I think we were winning 1-0 away at St James's and he was playing for Newcastle. And I remember getting into the walls of tunnel and he's going... Don't worry, boys, he'll give us one. He'll give us a goal about me. And I was standing there thinking, thinking, right, this is like Stuart Pearce, who I look up to. Like, whoa, he's just digging. How's he come for me when there's 11 other players here? Or more senior players, he's come for me.
I know.
I couldn't believe it. But they're the things that they build. Either you sink or you swim.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've got to be prepared.
Yeah, that's it. That's, you think of all the great players you've seen, like Lee Hodges, and that, who didn't quite make it. Maybe them sort of lessons... I don't know the names, but players were great young players. Maybe they didn't come through them little lessons. I did with Dennis Wise, same thing. And Dennis was like a bit of a hero of mine. And he'd just be in my ear roll through the whole game. Yeah, you can't do this, you can't do that, you're not that good, and all that. And then you either puff your chest out and go for it, or you don't. And I think that's the biggest difference between whether these great young players come through or not. Mm. These little unseen moments, which where you either, like you said, sink or swim.
I always think you've got to use it as fuel.
Yeah.
Negativity, it can make you go, like we said, one way or the other. You go either go up or you go down, but you've got to turn them type of things into things that benefit you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they be your drivers.
Yeah.
But negativity in the media, I didn't care about it because I didn't respect their opinions anyway. You're not a professional. You're not someone who I think is going to affect my career in terms of the way I play and that.
Yeah.
But I would still have it. It would be noted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When training gets tough, them runs we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I want to prove that wrong.
Yeah.
I want to prove them people wrong. That person didn't pick me. I don't think I'm good enough to go to the next stage. Do you know what I mean? Rather than, oh, they're talking about me and use it as something where you can have an excuse.
Yeah.
Sport pods.
So West Ham, we had a great time with a great team, but you know, at that time, and rightly so, you sort of not outgrew the club, but your ambitions outgrew the club. I remember the day when Leeds come in for you, and Leeds would, it's hard to, for people listening to this now, Leeds at the time were like the equivalent of like maybe like a Man City, not Man City, maybe like just underneath them. Like they were like the team to go to, weren't they? Trying all the best young British talent. Mm. How did that come about? And how did you find that going from West Ham to Champions League football?
Leeds were a team in like, they're hoovering up all the best young players.
Yeah.
They had a really exciting young squad that were on the cusp of some success, it seemed. Who could challenge a Man United at the time. Playing Champions League football. And you know what? I didn't want to leave West Ham. I didn't.
Right.
But for two summers, I'd gone to Terry Brown, who was the owner, and I'd gone to him and said to him, "We're going to buy anyone."
Yeah.
We got, and because I knew what was under the bonnet. I knew that it was like me, Frank, you, Carrick, Defoe, Anton, Greg Johnson, all these players coming through. But we've got Di Canio, Trevor Sinclair, etc. At the club. If you just buy a few to add to this, this is a conversation I had with him.
Yeah.
Just buy a few to add to this. We're gonna do something.
Yeah.
We're in the FA Cup or something.
Yeah.
And I'd have been happy with that, I swear at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, "We can't go into the red."
Yeah.
And you've got to respect that. It's fine. He was like, "We're not going into the red. There's other clubs that are doing it. We ain't doing that. We're not about that." And I was like, "Okay, cool." That summer I was fine. The next summer I'd done it again. And then don't forget, I went before the transfer windows happened. I went in November. So I went and played Newcastle on the Saturday or Tuesday night or something like that. At Newcastle, Leeds, sorry, on a Wednesday night, I think.
I remember the game.
And we won. Canute scored, unbelievable. Yeah. And Leeds fans were singing my name in the game.
Right.
It was weird. Right. There was rumours they were trying to buy me. They were singing my name. West Ham fans were singing my name. It was a surreal moment, really.
Yeah.
And then I was out shopping with my dad, and the phone goes, and it was the chief executive at West Ham said, we've accepted a bid of £18 million from Leeds. The moment he said that, I was gone.
Yeah.
And funnily, I got there. As I was getting to the meeting to go and meet Leeds, Chelsea rang.
Right.
And said, we'll match whatever Leeds are offering. And I said, listen, with all due respect, thank you, but I need to leave London.
Really?
Because I was getting a lot of trouble off the pitch. My mates and that were going out all the time, and I was going to the opening of an envelope, mate. I was anything that was going on, I was there. I wanted to know what's going on. I was like a social butterfly.
I know.
So the best thing for me for my career was to leave and get away and not have them pulls to go into the nightclubs. And I remember talking to David O'Leary to Peter Risdow, who was negotiating for Leeds, and him and my agent, and we were talking. I was sitting there thinking, I don't want to know that money.
Yeah.
The money's going to come.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be a lot of money that I've never imagined in my life.
Yeah.
And I said to Peter Risdow, please just get me a phone call. Can I speak to David O'Leary, please?
Yeah.
What do you want to speak to him for? I said, listen, I just want to speak to him. So I got him on the phone and said, listen, Mr. O'Leary, just please promise me you're going to coach me.
Yeah.
He's a centre back. You had a long, illustrious career. Please just pass on some of that to me. He went, don't you worry, I'll coach you. And you know what? I don't even think you'll be here long.
Is that what he said?
And when he said that, I said, you know what? I'm there. And to his credit, him, Roy Aitken and Eddie Gray, coached me, man. They were good, they were really good.
Imagine that, though, Ree. I don't know if a young player would, nowadays, that's unfair. Maybe would they have the humility, like, because you was like an England international at the time.
I was coming back from the World Cup.
Come back from the World Cup, 2002.
No, sorry, it was
2001.
I was an England player. I played for England and stuff.
You play for England, and that must be music. But if you're a manager, that's music to your ears. A player not worried about the finances and just like, I want to get better.
Do you know why though? Because pride.
Yeah.
If I go to Leeds for all that money, and I know all of the stories and all of the media attention you're going to get, and I foul, I can't come home.
Yeah.
In my head. That's all I was thinking. I can't foul, man.
Yeah.
So I need to be going knowing that I'm going to have the best opportunity. You're going to coach me. Simple as that.
Mate, it's hard to talk about that. It's an interesting time in Leeds history, because you got to the Champions League semi-final. Mm. When did you feel that it was crumbling there a little bit? Was there any moments?
Season.
No?
Didn't really know. But my agent at the time, who I was with, Pini Zahavi, was like a super agent back then. He was in the know, and he knew all the people behind the scenes. He knew what was going on, all the clubs and stuff. So after the season finished, he started talking to me and saying, like, this club's interested. And I was like, listen, I'm quite happy, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, but the club ain't. The club ain't in a good place.
Really?
Like, and then when he said to me that actually the club actually need to sell you.
Right.
It's not like they want to sell you. They don't really want to sell you, but if they don't sell you, they have to sell 10.
Really?
So, like, and that's why I've recently I went to a game, and the Leeds fans were like the away fans, who were the most like punchy fans.
Mm.
They were bang on me, like, aggressive.
I think we did the game.
Yeah, Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like 20 odd years ago. And, and for one, by the way, if you look at the detail, I only left because I had to leave.
Yeah.
And it was Man United.
Yeah.
And I know it's a rivalry, but I want to go and win.
Mm.
But also, listen, I've actually brought £30 million into your club and helped you, stopped you going like extinct almost.
Yeah.
So that one baffles me. But once I knew United were in for me and Sir Alex Ferguson, and they're winning. You've got to remember, I'd played up, I was 23, 24 years old then.
Yeah.
I didn't want a thing.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking the clock's ticking. I need to get on the, and I go in the change room. I go to Man United, and I'm sitting in the change room. People have won five or six Premier Leagues.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, whoa, I am way off.
Yeah.
So it was a no-brainer. As soon as I heard Man United, I had to go.
Did you? I don't know. I remember Gary Neville at the World Cup in Japan. Were they caught in you then?
Yeah,
I remember being in a room at some point, and then.
You got to come. It's bigger than England. That's what you should say to me.
Well, they ain't asking me.
No, because you know what? Two, three, 4 years before that, they were like talking. Like, I remember them saying to Sol, come on, Sol.
Yeah.
Come to Man United.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I used to think, right, one day, man, yeah. I beg them, man, to be talking to me like that. Please. And then all of a sudden, it became like, by the end, that was saying, you've got to come here. He's big. And we go away with England and you see all the fanfare. It's nothing compared to what happens at Man United. This is nothing.
Really?
It's baby steps. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I need to see that.
Talk to me about the first few weeks at United.
Well, I was wearing like a similar colour suit to this.
I can remember. I remember.
Beautiful. So I'm gonna bring it. I should have brought it. But no, it's you walk into that stadium, man, as an opposing player.
Sorry, you say you're not confident, or you wasn't confident as a young kid, but your confidence must have been brimming to put that suit on a Man United debut.
With bleached blonde hair as well.
That's what I'm saying. Like you, that is an intent. Like I'm.
That was fast forwarding, remember, that's fast forwarding a good few years and a lot had gone on that time. Yeah. I was prime, bro.
Yeah.
On and off the pitch, prime. And it was like, I went into it thinking, this is a moment, this is history.
Yeah.
That's how I walked into that stadium at the time. I will leave a mark here on this day, whether it don't happen in the future with this club, but you remember I've been here to sign.
Yeah.
And it was, and I remember the gaffer looking at me and he said to my mum, like, what the hell is he wearing? And I said, listen, don't worry, it comes to Manchester in a couple of years. The fashion will follow later, like America. We follow America. Manchester follows London. But it was, the suit became more famous to me in the end, I think.
Mate, no, listen, it didn't. You had a fantastic, but that dressing room, I mean, that group of players were special, but the players that I didn't, like your Roy Keane, your Ryan Giggs, was that, did anyone stand out and surprise you how good they was? Or did you expect it?
It was the most nervous time ever in my career walking into that change room in the training ground and then walking out on a training pitch the first time.
Yeah,
most nervous I've ever been.
Really?
Because you know they're looking at you going, what does that amount of money bring to the table?
Yeah.
Need to see it right now. No, I'll give you a breathing space. That's why when you hear about these players now who sign for big clubs for big money today and we're going, I'll give them a whole year.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, bruv, I had a training session. A training session to show that I'm worthy. I'm worth it. I'm just seeing other guys getting 18 months and still ain't cooked it. And they're saying, no, it's all right. Bedding in period.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
These guys are getting some grace.
Yeah.
But it was so nerve-wracking. And I think that's the person who stood out for me. I knew he was good, but I didn't know his finishing was that level, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Really?
His finishing was it was mad.
You're not the first person to say that.
But he was like a scientist about it, though.
Really?
Like the shooting back through the legs and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it made me alter the way I defended.
Yeah.
Through my career, like when you're defending, say for instance, hard to reimagine it here, but if I'm defending and the striker's coming across me here, or you're the striker coming across me here, and you're shooting in the goal behind me, and you're say middle of goal, 18-yard box, I would always overstretch as a kid.
Right.
Got to get across so he can't bend it round me.
Yeah.
Now, I say to the keepers, like Edwin especially, like, I'll block the one back through the legs because a lot of strikers started doing it. Wazza started doing it.
Yeah.
Saha. Yeah. And Nistelrooy, they all started doing it. And then you play against other players, Aguero, etc. They all do it. You look now, a lot of goals go back between legs of defenders. So I used to say, I'm not going to stretch for that. You cover the far post, the near post here, if he's going to whip it round, he ain't going back through my legs because if he goes back through my legs, you can't react. You can't see it. Do you know what I mean? So maybe a lot of the way I was thinking about things. And that was because of him.
Yeah.
Mad.
I knew he was a great finisher and all them, for him to stand out, that's amazing.
And he was the only player I see give Ashley Cole a hard time on more than one occasion.
Playing off the right. Yeah.
Because he played like an inside, like a Salah would play now.
Where
he don't play wide, he plays starts wide, comes in.
And
he affects his left back massively. Yeah. And Ash couldn't work out how to defend him. Yeah.
Clever footballer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Very clever.
Wicked player.
I mean, it wasn't easy at the start because, you know, the great Arsenal team to go up against. But winning your first trophy, I know what it meant for me, you know. But
it's out there with the best ones.
Yeah.
Because it's a relief.
Yeah.
You must have had a sense of relief. More than like happiness, joy, whatever. Relief.
The League Cup, when we beat Liverpool in the final, similar situation. I'm thinking I've won 4 World Cups in one day. I'm bouncing around the place and there's Mourinho and who's just won the Champions League and they're just like...
You got to like press the reset button, don't it?
Tranquilo.
Yeah, relax.
I needed at least 2 days to come.
I got told that. Like, I remember, I never forget it. I looked up to Paul Ince as a player.
Yeah.
And when we used to be towards the back end of the season, you'd either be really close to winning the league if you're points ahead.
Yeah.
or you're in the race, and we'd won the league, I think, I don't know what year, it might have been my first year.
Was it the first year?
Yeah, and we went to the races, Chester races, and Incy was there.
Yeah.
And I see him, yes, Incy, what's happening, man? Yeah. He went, calm down, you've only won one league. Bro, the biggest deflator, just took this, like, punished me. I was on the floor.
Yeah.
I walked away, I put my drink down and said, bro, calm down now, and like, reevaluate it, you've got more to do. Like, but you needed them little checks, it was nice. Yeah. I saw him recently and told him, he was laughing, but that first one, man, it's just like, wow. Bearing in mind, we lost the League Cup to Liverpool that year, 2-0 at Cardiff.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, I haven't come here and it's going to be a change of fortune for the club and we're now not going to win.
Yeah.
So again, that's another, you use things to fuel you a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, we can't not win.
Yeah,
like, if we don't win now, they've spent all this money on me and I'm the reason why they're not winning them.
Yeah.
So that's everyone's going to look at it in my head. That's how I was playing it out. So to win the first one, wow. Leeds beat Arsenal at Highbury and that meant we won a league.
Yes.
And I don't think my credit card was behind every bar in Manchester. just mate, unbelievable. And I remember playing at that weekend, the next weekend against Everton, and Wazza walked past me and went, oh, you stink of alcohol, what's going on? I said, I've been out a week, bruv, I swear. You win the league, this is how you celebrate.
That is brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Alex Ferguson, we can't not talk about Alex Ferguson. Mm. I know he's a massive influence on you, but in them early years, how did he treat you? You know, coming in with the big money.
Yeah, you know what he was really good at? He was really good at taking away the pressure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, I've bought you because you're a good player.
Yeah.
Do what you're good at.
Right.
No complications.
Yeah.
Didn't try and make it. He wanted you to simplify everything. Just play why you're here, because you're good.
Yeah.
You're good enough. I ain't bringing you here because you're not good enough. Just play your normal game.
Yeah.
Like some managers you'd get, I'm sure, will come in and start giving you so much information that you think, don't know if I'm coming or going.
Yeah.
He weren't like that. You just go out there and play, and it was a surprise, really, because I was expecting to have to take in a lot of information.
Yeah.
Because that I associated that with winning, it must be.
Yeah.
That's the reason why they're winning. They must have more information, more data and everything, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was even more simple.
Yeah.
And you're playing with better players, and he demanded standards every day. Just his presence on a training pitch, it's got to be a high standard. The players drove that as well, but he's standing there, giving no input to the training session, but just standing there.
Well, it's incredible. Like that is just self-thought. That's just awareness of what's going on. He must know, I'm bringing a player into Manchester United. Like you said, it's a massive step for any player.
Yeah.
And then to come in and then to throw more fuel on the fire effectively and give more information. No, just you're here for a reason, good enough. Less is more.
Yeah, 100, that's the perfect saying. But you know what as well, what I'll give him credit for, the due diligence was done.
Mm.
He'd find out about your character, he'd talk to people that are close to you, he'd talk about the previous clubs that you've been at, how you adapted, what's your attitude like, what's he like, is he married, you've got kids?
Yeah.
He knew everything.
Yeah.
And that detail that he used to go into, you'd know my granddad's favourite drink.
Really?
Yeah. Now my granddad's favourite drink. Bought him a drink when my granddad was in the players' lounge. My granddad couldn't believe it. He fell off his chair.
Yeah.
Sir Alex Ferguson's ordered me a drink. I sent a drink over.
Yeah.
Can't believe it. My granddad's in hospital. Flowers turn up.
Yeah.
My mum's in hospital. Flowers turn up. Mad stuff where you go. That's when people talk about the goal in the last minutes and like Fergie time.
Yeah.
They ain't the reason, but they must have a little part.
Of course. There's something inside you. When a manager does that for you, or knows your kids' names or something like that. There's something inside you that will go the extra mile for him, wherever it may. Whether it be on the pitch or in the dressing room.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, I've got this theory about you. You're a frustrated number 10. You should be wearing the moulds.
Yeah.
And there was a goal. This must be your favourite goal, the Liverpool goal.
Oh,
talk
beautiful
to me.
Goal. Bruv, the way I pulled it out of the sky, it had snow on it. It went so high. Velcro toes, they called me when it came down, and then the left foot banger, top keeper.
I remember watching it live, just thinking, he's enjoying that.
The sound effects would have been nuts.
The gun fingers come out.
Do you know what? I just, like you said it. As a kid, I was a midfielder, attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
You score goals and that, and creative.
Yeah.
And then I went centre back. So when I was a kid, my approach to a game was how I can bend up the forward. I can do skills against the forward and get out of a tight situation. It weren't about keeping a clean sheet, even when I was at West Ham.
Yeah.
It weren't until I went to Leeds and O'Leary said to me, "No, you pride yourself on clean sheets."
Yeah.
And that's changed my thinking. Because I've had a good game. I come off a game and people say, "How did you play?" Yeah, I played, mate. if I can get you this skill that I've done on the forward, a joke, mate, seriously.
Yeah.
What was the score? We lost 3-1.
Yeah.
You're a defender, though. You lost 3-1. You couldn't have played well. Do you know what I mean? But that's my thinking. So, I loved it. If I could wear molds and no shin pads, that'd have been me.
Mate, I was going through some pictures the other day. Every goal I scored for England, you're on my back. I think, as he got there that quick? Every single goal.
I prided myself on that as well. Celebrations being involved. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I loved the talking in the huddle. And I used to love it. I just loved the banter and stuff. And
Because
I knew I was never scoring goals. I weren't like a JT or someone who scored goals at centre-half, Ramos on that. I didn't score many goals.
Yeah.
Just scored bangers. Yeah. But, so I needed to celebrate those moments. I loved it.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant.
And you know what the good thing about Man United, what I learned at Man United? What? Celebrate your wins.
Yeah.
Like, celebrate your goals in the game. And I remember the lads used to say, stay here.
Make it
long it out a bit.
So the
fans see it and they know.
Yeah, they know you're together. No, definitely. I mean, you know, at this time, 2006, I went to Chelsea in 2003 and we started that great rivalry. Yeah. You know, we'd take, you know, FA Cup finals, leagues, and it culminated. The guys have great, they take great pride in getting guests on. Yeah. So I have to talk about the 2008 Champions League final again.
But you beat us in finals. Drogba scored in the FA Cup final, killed us.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's twos and throws, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you come up against some great sides. I personally think, I had Scholesy on and we talked about it, and I think that 2008 Man United team's, that's the best team I've played in the Premier League against. You had everything. And, you know, we take great pride in, we won trophies, FA Cups, leagues against yous, you know, but that game, it was a horrible game from my perspective, playing against your rivals. Scholesy said something I thought was quite interesting. He said, the teams were evenly matched. We had great players. He said he went into the game thinking, we can't lose because we've got Alex Ferguson. And in all due respect, we've got Avram, you know, who's not used to being that level. I mean, how was that day for you? And
yeah, I didn't look at it like that. It's a good way of looking. If you look at it like that, I can see that with all due respect to Avram Grant. I thought both teams, I think what you done is you made us have to rethink and go up a level. Because before that, we could chill till Christmas.
Yeah.
And not be really focused, not even look at or think about the league table.
Yeah.
But think, if we turn the year and we're within 8 or 10 points, we could smoke it still.
Yeah.
But with you boys, Mourinho came and built a team that you used to come out of the blocks, man. If we weren't within touching distance at Christmas, it was game over.
Yeah.
For 2 years that happened.
Yeah.
You swept it.
Yeah.
And I remember the manager before the third season when we won it back, and the manager saying, you have to start well. Because we didn't think about it the second year when you won the second one. The manager said, well, there ain't no starting slow and think you're going to get back in it. It's changed now. Mourinho's brought a different animal to the table. And so we changed. So we were focused immediately as the season started.
Do you remember, I think it was the second title or the first title. We won, we played at Old Trafford and we won. But it's one of my most embarrassing moments on the pitch. It's commonplace now, but you had to form a guard to clap us out. And I'm looking there thinking, you know.
Was it at your place?
It was at Old Trafford. And it was, I don't know if you played, you might have missed the game, but it was nothing game, we'd won the leagues, and then it was like Gary Neville, Roy Keane, clapping us on the pitch. Was that ever mentioned as fuel for next year? Don't let this happen again.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely mentioned, things like that. It's embarrassing as a player. You're sitting there, your rivals are walking out smug. Whether you want to be or not, I will think that you're being smug.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you probably think the same.
Yeah.
And you'll be the most respectful you probably could be because you're probably embarrassed about doing it.
Yeah.
But I would take it as you're being smug.
Yeah.
And it would kill my pride and ego.
Yeah.
And it's like the Champions League final. The thought of having to go with England three or 4 days later
it was heartbreaking.
To see you guys was like... And that's why when I went, I made it a point. I'll only talk about it if you talked about it.
I mean,
I'm not going to come in and go like with a medal around my neck and things like that. Yeah. I wouldn't have done that. And I'd like to think you guys would have been the same. So it's hard for both ways. But like you, in my head, it was like, I can't go to England not winning.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest thing for me. And that was what was in my head when I was going out. And It was a nasty experience in a lot of ways. You're playing against an England team, an English team, who you're rivals with for the last few years as well.
Yeah.
There's so much more riding on it.
There's so much, yeah. And then, listen, you must have had a great time celebrating. I remember talking to Frank when they won it, Chelsea, in 2012. He said he went out for 3 days. I mean, you must have had a right good celebration.
It was the drunkest I've ever been in my life.
Really?
I swear to you. I had a drink off with a fan that got into the party.
Yeah.
He stopped at about 5 pints, like down in them, bang, back to back. I'd done about six. I think he done five, and I said, I'll give you one for luck as well, just to see you off. But it caught up with me about 2 hours later, like a baseball bat hit me around the head, and I was just like in an absolute state. And my dad put me in the shower, shut the door, and I got in the shower in my suit.
Really?
I was mangled, it was funny. And I was saying, like, Dad, just order me a plane, I ain't going with the team, I'm going when I want, I ain't coming on the plane. Just book me a plane, Dad. Like, mad stuff, like, and ended up getting on the plane and just singing mad songs. So Sir Bobby Charlton and all the executives and that were in front and the manager, and it's like the senior players next.
Yeah.
So like me, Giggsy, Nev, Edwin and that. With our families, and everyone's there just like enjoying it, having a few glasses of champagne or whatever. I was just sitting there belting out songs, my tie around my head, just going nuts, like going crazy. And I'm sure they were looking at me like, this guy is a freak. Like, it was mad. So it was a unreal experience. And we won the double that year, like the Premier League and the Champions League, which made it even sweeter. Because the mad thing is, we won the Premier League twice after that, but got beat in the final against Barcelona twice.
Yeah.
So your summer was that
on a
devastated summer, but you've won the league.
Yeah, but that's the standards you set at that club.
Yeah, so it's mad. So I've got to enjoy that one. It was the best.
BT Sport Pods. You ended up winning countless medals at Man United. You formed a partnership with Vidic.
Mm.
I imagine that's the best centre-half pairing you've had. I mean, any other
honourable
mentions?
I played with some great players at centre-half. With England, I played with Sol Campbell, who had the best relationship on the pitch. Done really well together. John Terry, another one.
Yeah.
But Vidic, because the time as well we played together and the amount of things we won together.
Yeah.
And just the feeling that I had when I was on the pitch. We never really spoke about, make sure you cover this or you do this, or we have to make sure. The odd thing you might say about a certain particular striker, but it was never like, we've got to manufacture this.
Yeah.
It just came. Like, it was like, after a period of time, it was like, it was just meant to be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it was amazing. Considering when he first came, the lads were going, who is this? He's dry. Really? Who's bought him?
Yeah.
I remember Wazza coming off a training pitch saying, I'm ripping him every day. This geezer, who is he?
Yeah.
He turned into an animal.
He was fantastic. Mm. I mean, and he'd probably go down as one of Man United's. It wasn't a lot of money, was it? One of the best buys.
I think it was 7 million.
It's a bargain, isn't it?
Unreal. Him and Patrice Evra came in the same window for that.
Wow.
He probably put 15 million between them.
Yeah. Great bit of business. Sticking with Man United, why do you, apart from the obvious reason, Alex Ferguson, David Gill, why do you think it's taken them, still taking them so much time to get back on track? I mean, this could probably be another podcast, but is there anything that we're not talked about that you can think of?
I think the relationship between David Gill and Sir Alex Ferguson can never be understated, how important that was at a football club. That role between the chief executive and the manager. More so then because they had more pull and more power. It was very it was a really small crop that run the club. Now they're big machines with different areas within the club and different sections and whatnot, which is understandable, the game's changed. But they never quite replaced that relationship.
Yeah.
They had eyes and ears everywhere, they controlled a lot of the stuff. It all filtered out through them.
Yeah.
Whereas I think since that point, it kind of got fragmented and they never really recreated a structure that was beneficial and positive for the football club.
Yeah.
They're trying to rebuild that now behind the scenes. But it's going to take a considerable amount of time to get that right.
I mean, from an outsider, I would even oversimplify. I think you're right, but I think the people that have come in since then to do them types of roles, whatever way, I just think they've just not been good enough for the club.
Yeah, and that's improved. I don't think those people could really argue. Like, Man United have gone from there, and all of a sudden they've gone down there for the last 12 whatever years it is. So when it's going well, those people would have been champion, but it hasn't gone well, so you've got to take your hit.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, listen, I'm one of the most successful players at United of all time. England, we both played together for England. I remember seeing you. I always knew you was always a great player as a young player, but I remember coming every time I come back for England. When you went to Leeds, you went up a level. Then you went up to Man United, and then I started playing with you for England again. And there was an aggression in your play that I thought, because we were pals, we'd go out, and you was never like that at West Ham. Mm. And I remember I lost the ball at the World Cup, and you run 30 yards to scream at me, right? And I'm thinking, is he sure? It threw me for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, never mentioned it. You probably won't even remember it. Mm. But you'd gone up like, it was like you become like a men. Like Klopp talks about a mentality monster. Mm. I mean, at what point did you feel, or was there any moment or anything that you changed? I felt you changed, you become even more of an animal on the pitch. We had a few run-ins and I thought, why is he saying, because I was always chilled on the pitch. Mm. I wouldn't argue with anyone or anything like that, especially my pal.
Yeah, yeah.
You come for me a couple of times. And I was thinking, was that just your will to win?
Yeah, I was just desperate to win. I hated losing, even in training. It would ruin my whole day if we lost in training. Yeah. And I'd be onto people. And a lot of my ex-teammates would like, I was always in a training ground, a laugh. I wanted a laugh. I'd search out a laugh. I loved it. I loved the banter and stuff. But when it came to football and I was out there, through my career, it became more serious and serious and serious.
Yeah.
I loved football. I was passionate about it as a kid.
Yeah.
But I didn't have anybody to look at to go, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
To be successful. Like, with all due respect to West Ham, we were that level. Yeah. Then Leeds hadn't won anything. No one in there was real sustained winners, consistent over a period of time. Then you get to Man United and you go and change them, and it's either you're going to be like a sponge to it all and take the great pieces out of each individual and the management, or you're going to go in there blind and then walk out the way you walked in.
Yeah.
And just basic things like everyday standards had to be there. At Leeds, I could be brilliant one day, chill, take my foot off it another day.
Yeah.
But United, you have to be that every day.
Yeah.
And then once you get that taste, like you get that taste for winning, you can't let that go, man.
So
it almost becomes like an obsession. And like,
if
I feel something's going on the pitch that needs to be said that it's going to make sure we're going to get over the line, then I was always quite comfortable doing that. And nothing was ever personal with me. I could shout and bawl at someone on the pitch, and the minute I come off here, it'd be fine. Like, Adrian, what's happening with it? And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
That's what I miss in the game today. Yeah. I don't see the rivalries. Forget the clubs, the players.
Yeah.
I don't see that bit of like a nastiness or an aggression that I love to see. I miss that.
Yeah, it's all very happy, slappy and nice. Isn't
he's my mate on Instagram. Never met him. He's my mate on Instagram, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't say nothing to him.
Yeah.
Got to be cool.
Yeah.
So that's where it feels a little bit. I'd rather it be like, smash him on the pitch, go nuts, and then send him a DM on after. It didn't mean that. Or whatever.
Yeah,
but that's fine. That'd be brilliant. But it don't seem like it's like that at the moment.
No.
I want the nastiness back.
Yeah, but that's the way. I think that's the way of the world. And it's so much better in so many other ways. Mm. But you do miss that little bit of... what's the word, like that little bit of devilment on the pitch.
Because it creates them little subplots, doesn't it? Them little stories that you go into a game, I can't wait till they come up against each other.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that now.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, England, 81 times for your career. You played for England, you captained your country. That must have been a dream come true. Mm. We've talked on many occasions about us underperforming. I think people, it's harsh though, because we did underperform, but also... you need that little bit of something, that little bit of luck. And we never really got it, did we?
Yeah, but I still think you've got to make your own luck as well.
Mm.
I just feel that we were... in the end, we weren't good enough, that's first and foremost.
Yeah.
But I feel that if we were set up differently, shape-wise, we would have given ourselves a better chance.
Yeah.
But...
do you know, I remember 2006, I remember just before going to the World Cup, I was sitting with dinner with Mourinho. And there was at a time when, remember, Sven was going to leave.
Mm.
And he was, I don't know, he was half joking, was talking about taking the job. And he was messing about with the coaches, talking about what he would do, like play 4-3-3 and play players here and all that. And I was thinking, we needed someone like him, didn't we?
We were really rigid, weren't we? We were like 4-4-2.
Yeah.
And then Capello come really rigid, old school 4-4-2. Like, wingers stay wide, don't come inside, don't create overloads in anywhere. Like, And we were, remember, we, well, how I look at it as well, we had some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
We had players, probably had a handful of players that would probably walk into every other team.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But the depth of our squad wasn't great, if you look at it properly. We didn't have the depth of other squads, maybe, right?
Mm.
But I don't know, man. We just didn't have that. I don't know what it was. We played so rigid, man.
Mm.
And it was hard because we were getting pumped by our teams and popped off the pitch by like teams like Albania and Belarus.
Tactically, we weren't.
Yeah, we were getting like overloaded in midfield by all these like the minnows.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever have an easy game for England? It always felt hard.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
And I just think we've got all these great players, but we look average.
Yeah. I know.
It's mad.
It shouldn't have been like that.
Mm.
But listen, it's great now that you know we've come a long way. The coaching's got better tactically. Mm. I think the lads are more astute. The game's
if these guys
on.
Don't win something, man, it's going to be because the talent we've got.
If they don't win it, we're cursed. We're cursed. It will never happen because I just feel like we've all the like got the players, got the manager, got the tactics.
What's the only thing you think is holding us back? If you're going to say there's one thing that makes you question a team winning something.
And I love Gareth, and I love him. I don't want. Well, there's going to be a coming occasion in Qatar, back end of the tournament. We're playing one of the big games. I don't want us to go safety first. I think the footballers, Mason Mounts, Jack Grealish, Foden, Maddison. I think at least three of them need to be on the pitch. On any one occasion, at least two of them, not one, because there's so many times in international football you need to handle the ball. And also their personalities. I think we had players, I don't know if you think, but I would never name names, but I've had players who I've watched play for England and just crumble because of the occasion, because it's, you know, even if it was just a qualifier.
It's different, isn't it?
It's a different pressure.
Yeah.
So you need personality, and I think them players, personality and technical ability above all else in international football, but I just hope Gareth, and I believe in him, I hope
Brave.
That moment comes and we don't go safety first again. Ree, with every guest we do a quick fire questions. I'm going to hit you with them. I think I know the answer to a couple of these, but who was the best player you ever played against?
Best player I ever played against was Ronaldo, the Brazilian one.
Yeah.
And Messi.
Yeah. It's a massive shout. Two great players. If you could go back and relive one moment of your career, what would it be? Bringing the ball down from the sky against Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's got to be that.
If I could relive, yeah. Well, that's a bad, mad question, that. If I could relive.
Not a game, a moment.
The feeling I got
when
Leeds beat Arsenal at Highbury. That emotion that I had then.
Yeah.
That was amazing. But also Moscow, when the penalty was saved. If you could bottle that feeling there.
Yeah.
Like, everything.
Yeah.
Every emotion you can think, joy, everything.
I just think that the directors and the producers, have you got anyone else from Moscow you want me to interview? Do you know what I mean? Dig me out or something. All right, okay.
Sorry, man.
If you could change one moment of your career, what would it be?
If I could change one moment in my career, it would be the Champions League finals against Barcelona.
What would you do different?
I would play the way that got us there.
Yeah.
Tactically.
Okay.
Which was a little bit more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Be set up a bit harder to beat.
Yeah.
And that would have been playing to our strengths.
Yeah. Kidnap Lionel Messi before the game.
Yeah, he would have been put down.
Send the boys from Peckham down there.
He'd have been food poisoning or something. We've gone on the Tottenham one.
Messi or Ronaldo?
Why do we have to compare these two, man?
You can say no comment.
The two best players that we've ever had on this planet that have ever stripped up to play football.
Yeah.
And have played at this level. No one has ever seen anyone play at this level for so long.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They've done stuff that some players have done in
just,
the odd season.
Just staying fit for that
that's
long.
That's what I mean. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. If you could have played alongside any centre-back to ever play the game, who would you pick to be your partner?
I would have played with Yap Stam.
Really?
Yeah, I think if I was going to say the player that I'd have had a great relationship with, it would have been an unbelievable partnership, Yap Stam.
Oh, mate. a prime Jaap Stam and a prime Rio Ferdinand, I don't think you would have conceded more than 10 goals in the season. It would have been unbelievable. Ree, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Take care. Thank you.
BT Sport Pods.